If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and I'm here with Illini guy's director of recruiting, Kedrick Prince. We are going to have a fantastic discussion because the Illini won 78-60 over Minnesota up in Minneapolis tonight. Close first half, largely because Dane Danger, Coleman Hawkins, and Terrence Shannon had two fouls each and spent a considerable amount of the half watching the game from the bench. And in the second half, when they were playing much more often, the game turned relatively one-sided. And the Illini did a number on the Gophers, particularly holding them to 36% from the field, 23% from the three-point line. And when you take a look at that, you know, in the second half, they held Minnesota to 27.6% shooting and 14.3 from the three-point line. And when you have a team that you already, you out-rebound 50-29 and you outscore them in the paint 54-28, that leads to a rather one-sided half. Ked, what were your thoughts as you look at what you saw there in tonight's game?
Well, I thought it would have been a 30-point win if the three marvelous officials, you know, wouldn't have put Coleman Hawkins and Dane Danger and Terrence Shannon on the bench. I guess they wanted them to sit on the bench and try to learn how to officiate because they didn't want them to play, but that's a story for another day. This team is gelling. And there's been a lot of talk, you know, around the country who the best team in the Big Ten is. And right now, we can arguably say it's Purdue. And the argument is who is the second best team. And, you know, it's Rutgers. But I tell you, Illinois looks – they looked the part. They looked the part today. And they didn't – they got nothing offensively from Coleman Hawkins today. They got a very average game from Terrence Shannon today and Dane Danger, and they won by 18. I just extremely impressed with the mid-season corrections that Brad Underwood has done. You know, every year when he first got hired, Mike, I mean, people talked about how Oklahoma State struggled, and then they won 8 of 9 to get in the tournament. And you look at the history since Brad Underwood's been in Illinois, he's made adjustments. Those are really, really good coaches. This offense now, to me, looks really, really fun. I mean, you pick your poison. I know teams who – coaches will never say this other than probably Tom Izzo. Illinois is a tough team to match up with. They're long, and that offense, they spread you out. They attack, and they're so athletic, and they're long, and now they're shooting, and their confidence is there. They figured out the new guys, Terrence Shannon, Dane Danger, and the mayor, Matthew Meyer, you know, the microwave. He's figured out that you don't have to do the sidestep and, you know, two-step boogie to get a shot off.
Yeah, I thought that it's kind of interesting because when the offense does bog down, you've got two players who can get a shot off against just about anybody, and that's Matt Meyer and, of course, freshman Jaden Epps, who somehow can just take the ball at 6'1", can take the ball and go, you know, I think I'm going to go down the lane now, and somehow get shots off in the lane. You know, I would have thought that second name might be Terrence Shannon Jr., But and of course they do load up against him, so it's not fair to totally compare that. But I really thought that when the offense, you know, ran into problems, you know, you could just get the ball to Matt and let him handle it from that point on. And he did end up with a double-double, 19 points and 10 rebounds. And, of course, the interesting thing is you had Danger with 11 points and 4 rebounds, but only in 21 minutes. Terrence Shannon Jr. had 11 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal in 27 minutes. And Jaden Epps had 10 points, had 2 rebounds, and this is the – Jaden Epps had 2 blocks, so he and Meyer led the team with blocks in 25 minutes. I thought the other encouraging thing that I saw tonight was Sincere Harris was had a couple good shots. He did have a couple air balls too. But Ty Rogers ended up going 4 for 5, 8 points, 8 rebounds, 1 block. I really thought that it, maybe they need to just get Ty the ball around in the paint a little more. You know, okay, right now he doesn't have much confidence from the free throw line. So let's go ahead and get him the ball in the paint and see if we can get a few dunks or power layups and go from there.
My MVP tonight, yes, the Brandon Lee factor was great, but Ty Rogers was the MVP. Not just because he's figured out the system and they found a spot for him. I don't know if the Illinois fans remember, Illinois recruited Dawson Garcia extremely hard out of the portal. I'm talking extremely hard. Yep. And he went to North Carolina. Didn't fit in well. Then he went home to Minnesota. I'm bringing this up because Dawson Garcia got out of his points early when Ty wasn't in the game. Brad Underwood told us how good of a defensive player he is and how athletic he was, or excuse me. He looks every part of a Michigan State type of defender. He Dawson Garcia, he frustrated him. He played such good defense on him, you know, and some of the fouls I thought were bailout fouls. I mean, you look, there was one stretch, you could see the sweat on his face. He was working. Ty is a big part of this team, and I'm moving forward. I know at some point they're going to fix his free throw shooting like they did with Dame, because he's going to be on the floor and he's so active around the rim. He can't go 0-for-2 and 0-for-3 or 1-for-4 from the free throw line. So right now it looks like he's shooting missiles, but I know they'll get that corrected. I mean, but athletically, and the way he's big and he's long and his leaping ability, athletic ability, I don't know. It's got to be the best on the team. I mean, other than him and Sincere. So that's a nice, nice weapon. I mean, a very good game for Ty. And these kids are starting to figure it out. And today was the first time in my eyes I really saw the athleticism. I saw a bunch of athletes just be athletes today. You know, you saw Sincere just put it in second and third and fourth gear, blowing by people. You know, Matthew Meyer is a nightmare matchup for every team in the country, because how many teams start 3 guys that are 6'9", 6'10", or 6'11", you know, with Dane and Coleman and Matthew. That's why he's able to get rebounds and shoot over the top of people, because there's guys that are smaller than him guarding him. Nice, nice weapon to have.
Now, the other thing that I do see, which is a little bit, you know, over the top here, but I noticed when Coleman Hawkins plays the 4, he can't always get the dribble drive versus, you know, opponents. And because some of those 4s are as athletic as he is, or at least as quick side to side. And when he plays the 5, he becomes just deadly dangerous, because there just aren't many 5s who can keep up with him when he pulls them out away from the basket. Almost makes me think sometimes when Dane goes out of the game, maybe, you know, maybe with Luke Goody, you bring Luke Goody in and let Hawkins play the 5. And then you got Luke dive bombing from outside, and you also let Hawkins, you know, get some space and use that quickness advantage over the opposing center.
You know, that's a really good assessment. The thing with Coleman, I mean, they obviously him on that hesitation shooting the ball and pump fake, whatever terminology you want to use.
Yep.
He looks, even those balls that he's shooting from 30 feet, they look good. They look like there's a chance they could go in. But the one part of his game where I think he really needs to work on, because he's proven to me now that, yes, there's a chance he could play at the next level because of the way the NBA game is played. That part of his game, being able to, you know, he's long, but being able to put the ball on the floor and get to the rack and finish and finger roll over the top of the rim, because he gets stopped by guys that are a little bit quicker, you know, laterally, and I think he kind of struggles with that part of it. And there was early in the season, even last year, there'd be times where he would do it and you knew the shot doesn't have a chance to go in. If he could ever learn how to put the ball on the floor, which I know is a big part of his game, it's going to open up the floodgates for him, because he can potentially be a dangerous player, because he does have a nice stroke and he rebounds and he blocks shots really, really well. So, and I know Brad Sturdy posted tonight, and he's going to put it on our Line Eye Guys message board, that there was 8 NBA scouts there tonight.
Yeah, and I've kind of come to the conclusion that he's going to, in my opinion, he'll end up getting drafted if he wants to go this year. There's just too much, you know, there's too much potential there, you know, especially when you think about, and I always go back to Myers Leonard, who I'm not even certain, did he make any threes in college? He didn't make very many.
He didn't shoot very many, but he,
yeah, exactly.
He can do it.
And then he gets to the NBA, puts on 30 pounds, you know, at 7'1" or whatever he is, and he's hitting three-pointers like they're no big deal. So, you know, you put Coleman Hawkins with a little bit of a, you know, improvement over the time with the three-pointer, his mobility and quickness are going to make him a pain in the butt, even at that level. You know, the one thing I was going to say about Dawson Garcia is when I looked at his performance tonight, I kept thinking to myself, if he had not believed the hyperbole of North Carolina and the insane NIL dollars that they promised him that never happened, boy, if he had showed up in Champaign last year, you put a 6'10 power forward next to Kofi, that team looks remarkably different when you get to the NCAA playoffs.
If you put him up even on this year's team with Dane and Coleman and Matthew and Terrence Shant, oh my gosh. I mean, because he is a very, very good player. I mean, I can't take anything away from him. I mean, the last 3 or 4 games, he's put up 22 points, 23 points a game. He's a gifted player. And when I saw him tonight, I thought the same thing. In the back of my mind, I mean, we've all talked about this before. Sometimes these kids get bad advice. And I think the second time around when he left North Carolina, I don't even think Illinois even pursued it. I think they were just done. I mean, the kid had been through 3 schools, and it's a bad look. But he's a good player. He's put on some weight. And he could have been a guy that easily – Illinois has, 4 or 5 losses. I guarantee if he was playing, they might have won.
The funny thing about him, Ked, is, you know, the rap on him has always been his foot speed. But, boy, he looked a lot quicker this year than he did last year.
A lot quicker, and I think a lot of that is the different weight training programs that every school has to offer. I'm not saying, you know – we all know about Adam Fletcher, how good he is. I'm sure North Carolina has good, you know, good trainers, and you know they were obviously able to put some weight on him. That was the first thing I noticed. And if you really think about it, he is like a Coleman Hawkins or a Matthew Meyer. He's a big kid that can shoot the three and put them on the floor and score in the paint. So, I mean, you have 3 guys like that. That would just be a matchup nightmare for a lot of teams. And right now, I mean, I know we haven't talked much about Dane Danger, but out of all the kids they have, I mean, on the roster, you talk about a gym. I remember when Illinois got him, I remember one basketball coach, a college coach, texted me and said that the kid was going to be a bust. There's a reason he didn't play at Baylor and that he's never going to amount to anything. Boy, was that coach wrong.
Well, you know, it's so easy if you're going to guess – you know, pick against any particular player, he's not going to make it. You know, you're probably going to be right. But I really believe if you take a look, you know, the staff has been pretty good at eyeballing players and kind of doing the this guy's a good guy and that guy's not. Now, there's always going to be differences. If you follow basketball, you're going to be like, oh, I think that guy's good, and the coaches don't, and that always happens. But they've had a pretty good eye for talent, and of course, Coach Underwood knows Scott Drew. Maybe there was something that maybe they just felt that personality-wise, maybe he was just a better fit with the Illini coaches versus the Baylor coaches. Who knows?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a good day for the Illini women yesterday. Adelia McKenzie was from Minnesota. She played well yesterday. And, you know, Dane probably would have put up 25. Him being from Minnesota, grew up in Chicago, but, you know, was born in Chicago, but grew up in Minnesota. He was effective as well. You could see the look on his face when he got the and one, even though he missed a free throw. You could just see the extra motivation. And, you know, I heard one of his post-game interviews already, him talking about knowing probably 70% of the roster, because a lot of those guys he played with in the summertime being from Minnesota. So I'm sure that, you know, today's game meant a lot for him.
Yeah, you notice he's got that little Buck Williams hook where he faces the basket and flips it up. I thought that was a nice move. Again, Dane has a very, very he has a very varied and diverse offensive arsenal that I don't think anybody really told us about, you know, when he came here, because I think it surprises me just how good he is. And you can't just load up on one move with him.
No, and I'm really curious to see, and I may end up eating my words for this, what he's going to look like against the 7-foot 10-inch center from Purdue, the guy that hasn't had a foul in 16 games. How Dane does against him. Because, you know, I like how Brad, and I told people this, and people are saying, no, it's not true. You know, early in the season, you never saw Dane at the high post or anything like that. You know, this new offense is good because he's able to put the ball on the floor a little bit and go left and go right. I think he may cause some problems for Zach. Obviously, Zach's going to get his, but I'm just curious to see how this is going to work out, because right now, I mean, other than Zach Eady, I mean, I guess if I forget the guy's name at Rutgers, his name slips me, but
Omiyori.
Yeah, Dane's one of the better centers in the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, yeah. Cliff is better defensively, but I don't think Cliff is as good offensively or even anywhere near, to be honest. But as I look at what's out there, Dane is a huge opportunity, you know, as he gets rolling. And of course, the one that I don't know if we're going to see this year or not, I'd like to see if Zachary Perrin's going to get in. And of course, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you got Luke Goody, so there still are a couple more. And of course, we got Moretti coming over at point guard. So the Illini have three potential. I don't know if they'll all get in games this year, but they got three potential, you know, contributors who could be here and help out as well. And that's interesting to me.
My concern, no disrespect to Perrin and Moretti, my concern is how Luke Goody's going to fit in. He ended the season really well last year, and then in that secret scrimmage, I mean, the highlights that I saw, he shot the snot out of it. He looked really, really good. But my concern is this team now has a role. They all have a role. They know how many minutes they're going to play, you know, depending upon what the stripes are going to do. Somebody's going to be in foul trouble. So they know who's going to play. What is it going to be like if Luke Goody comes in and he's taking Ty Rogers' minutes, because Ty's now starting to try to figure it out, you know, just all of it. I mean, like, you don't want to see what they built go south. I mean, because they've done a really nice job so far, and I want to continue to see. Because, I mean, you listen to people nationally that this team is starting to gel again, and for the people who were upset that they weren't ranked, I wasn't surprised. I didn't think they were going to be. They had too many teams to jump. Just keep winning games, stay in the Big Ten race, because right now, I mean, in the Midwest, you know, most of the people are Big Ten fans, but the Big Ten is, you look at all the records, there's a lot of losses, a lot of 12-5s, 13-5s, and, you know, teams with a lot of losses. So if you want to get in the tournament, you darn well better stay on top, because I don't know how many teams the Big Ten are going to get in this year. I really don't. The injuries have hurt Wisconsin. They've hurt Indiana. So it's hard to – I even think Michigan State, you know. So it's hard to say how many teams are going to get in. If you don't want to get a horrible seed, you better stay in the top two or three, in my opinion.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I also think at some point when most of the other leagues are doing 18 conference games a year, the Big Ten may want to back off and go back to 18 as well, because that just gives you two more tough games and you'd be better off. You know, Illinois would be better off after playing a tough Big Ten schedule to put maybe, you know, you do a Gonzaga-Illinois State duo, you know, where you get a tough game and then you get an easy one.
Yep.
But, you know, what do I know? As you look at this team now, this Illini team is starting, like you said, to really kind of turn it on. Now all eyes turn forward to the game against the Hoosiers, you know, that'll be visiting State Farm Center. That game will be on at 7:30 on Thursday night on SF1. And I'm not a big Hoosier guy. I you know, I think everybody on the Illini guys' staff, nobody had them picked number one in the Big Ten. We thought their outside shooting would be an issue. But last game, they played tough defense, and they are physical. I got to think that this Indiana team is going to come in to Illinois, and I don't think they're going to give it all they got, because – they need the wins. And so, you know, this is another tough game right around the corner for the Illini.
I think all the games are tough. I thought tonight was a game where they could slip up and make a mistake. I don't know how well they're going to shoot it, how well they're going to execute. Nobody knows how they're going to call the game from an official standpoint. I know I've complained about the officials three times now. I don't think Illinois is going to overlook this team. I think they're going to come out, because if you remember last year, and I know only two guys on this team last year was Coleman, or three, Coleman Hawkins, Luke Goody, and RJ Melendez. When they went to the Big Ten tournament, you know, Mike Woodson was talking a lot of trash. He even did it again this year during the Big Ten media day. And I can assure you, they're not going to overlook Indiana. And I think Illinois is physical, but I don't want to see Indiana become physical, and then when Illinois tries to return the favor, they start blowing the whistle. It's a big game for Indiana, but Illinois is on a roll, and they know what's at stake. They know that there's a chance that they can still compete for a Big Ten title, because Purdue is going to slip up again on the road. It's just going to happen. They're not. I don't see them going undefeated. I don't know if they've been to Iowa yet. I know they don't come to Champaign, which, you know, is unfortunate, but I really don't see them, you know, going through the season with just one loss. So Illinois is going to be prepared. I know they'll have a couple more days rest. You saw how energetic they were tonight after playing Friday night. This is a big game, and now they're playing well. And again, keep this in mind. Like I said to you earlier, you didn't get a big offensive output from Dane Danger, Terrence Shannon, and Coleman Hawkins. So I don't expect that to repeat. I'm really looking forward to a really good basketball game Thursday night.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw something out here, and this is not for you, but, you know, I complain about the refs a lot. And what I want is a watchable product, an entertaining product for fans to watch. And what you need from the refs is more consistency. Nobody's going to get it all right. There's too much happening. It's too fast. So you're going to make mistakes. But you want to see them consistent. The NBA refs, for all the people make jokes, they're very consistent. They'll have their bad games because they are humans, but they are very consistent. And you know that a star like a Michael Jordan walks out, he's not going to foul out. And then a dud like me on a team, I probably got four fouls and I haven't even got out of warmups yet. So there is a star system, and the stars get away from more, go away with more, but you know that going in, and you know consistently what's a foul and what's not a foul. And that's where I think it makes the games hard to watch. It's got to be confusing for the players on how to play defense, because, you know, one time it's a foul. Next time it's not, it's the same play. And then for viewers, okay, if you have $1 billion in viewers or in TV contracts, you really have to decide what you're going to do in terms of what do you want to do to make that product the best product that you can. And that's where I think a lot of people, my complaining about referees kind of goes over their head. I'm looking at it from a standpoint of the watching something that's entertaining. You know, let's take a look. Even the NFL runs into some inconsistent refereeing, but they've got a product that's set up very well for television. You know, and I do think that with the Big Ten, you just run into some really weird games. I've rarely seen a game. And again, I thought the refs were fairly good tonight. I didn't think they particularly helped or hindered either team. But I have to be honest with you, to see one team at 54 points in the paint, the other team at 28, and then the team that had 28 points in the lane shot 25 free throws and the other team shot 14. It didn't make any material difference in the game. But to be honest, from a watchability standpoint, I don't know, swallow the whistle and make sure they both shoot 14 and we get the game over a little bit quicker and it's not so choppy. And again, when the Big Ten is, when you're going to get those $1 billion flowing in, fans are going to be harsher on the players. They're going to be more ratcheted up because of NIL and, you know, people paying to get players for their team versus the other team. And I just think if they hired full-time employees, trained them all year long, they didn't have to be doing like now a Big Ten ref may do 6 games a week. You know, they'll be all over the place, not only Big Ten games, but sometimes additional games to get a little bit of revenue. To me, all year round training, and then being able to mandate their schedules a little bit and pay them darn good money to do it. I just think you put the referees in a better place to be more successful. And the other thing I would do is I would add a fourth ref to basketball. Now, I got to be honest with you. Later on, we can ask our football guy, Matt Stevens, if there's some way, do you need another ref in football? I have no clue because I don't know the ref's jobs as close. But in basketball, I think if you had 2 people out front, 2 people on the baseline, then everybody only has to run halfway. And look, I'm a 55-year-old man. I don't want to try to keep up with Terrence Shannon Jr. And Sincere Harris would have lapped me. The speed he showed on his 96, foot drive, he would have lapped me about 10 times. So I just think there's things they can do better. So when we're bitching about the refs, again, they didn't make any material difference in this game. There's just some weird inconsistencies that from a viewership, I think you could do better for your product. And you're already, you know, you're getting, when you add up all these contracts, $1 billion. So wouldn't you want to make your product as best you can? You know, the bottom line is when Jim Cameron did Avatar, you know, he didn't do some of those stop action, special effects that you saw King Kong and Godzilla do back in the 60s. He used modern day effects and he spent money on them because it was an investment to make a good product. And I look at good referees as an investment, and let's not put people in a situation where they're tired, where they've traveled on airplanes 6 out of the last 7 days. And then you want them to go keep up with some of the best athletes in the world. So if that means, if I'm proposing that refs get a raise, if I'm proposing that they probably work a little less and they get training, that means I'm an anti-ref guy, then so be it. I'm an anti-ref guy. Chad, any thoughts?
Let me comment. I want to give a couple of examples. I guess my first thing is I want to see more consistency, and I want to see officials, whether it's college football or basketball, call what you see. I'm going to give 2 examples tonight that anybody who watched the game, you all saw the same replays I did because I didn't go to the game. There was a charging call when Coleman Hawkins got his 4th foul. The Minnesota player ran into his own player, and the official just said, oh, he fell over, Must have been Coleman because he was attacking the basket. Dawson Garcia, another one, is running to going to the basket. He saw Dane standing there. Then he saw Sincere was going to help. Excuse me, Jaden Epps was going to help out. So Dawson Garcia double pumped and went back up. You all saw Jaden Epps' facial expression. I don't even think the jerseys touched each other, but he called a foul. So that is tough for a player to learn how to play the game because you don't know what's going to be called. And here's the one where I'm going to agree with you, and I know people are thinking, Mike and Kendrick, you're losing your mind. Here's why four officials would make a difference. I don't want to say it's the age. They could be 35. They're not as fast as these athletes. Here's an example why I think having four officials would benefit college basketball. Illinois benefited from a call tonight when Jaden Epps clearly knocked it out of bounds. But you know why the official gave it to Illinois? Because he was not fast enough to run down the court. If you look at his angle, he was probably 10 feet away from being on the baseline to make the call. But if you have four officials, then you don't have to worry about that because they don't have to run as far back to make the call. Those are issues that I have because you could avoid those things. It's really frustrating, and I feel bad for Coleman Hawkins tonight and to be honest with you, Dane Danger and Terrence Shannon, because like I mentioned earlier, there were 8 NBA scouts in that arena tonight. And that's what's bad about it because those guys didn't get to showcase what they were doing because they're sitting on the bench. The flip side of it, and then I'll be done with the officiating part, is maybe go to six fouls. Maybe you go to six fouls, and I know people, you know, don't like that. I'm a fan of it. And I think the hardest calls in football, I know I said there was the last one. I think the hardest calls in football is the holding on the lineman. I think that's tough because you could call it every time. And I think the pass interference calls are tough. I think I don't know how they could position themselves on the field because I think there's a lot of pass interference calls both ways. This has nothing to do with Illinois. I'm talking just in college football in general that could be fixed. Because if a coach or a fan starts to boo right away, those officials are easily to be swayed and those flags are coming out.
Okay, well, no, that's fine. So this is going to get this podcast is now going to get confusing because Matt Stevens, the Illini staff writer who covers both the football and basketball team, just jumped on. So he must have heard us ranting about referees, which means he sits down, you know, in the podcast here. Matt,
honestly, there was just a lull between the first and the second quarter of the NFL playoff game tonight. So yeah, that was really, I didn't really care what you guys were talking about.
So you've heard us talk about the refereeing thing.
Sure.
Where do you fall in this thing? Because I let me throw one thing in before. Here's what I would do to college basketball. I would implement the sixth foul. I would make the help charge foul where if somebody beats their man, another guy comes over and stands there. So instead of a player being rewarded for beating their man, now they have to stop because somebody's gets in front of them and stands and waits to get run over. I would eliminate the help charge and I would add a fourth referee. Those are the three things I would do to college basketball. I have no idea on college football if adding a referee or two would help these gentlemen try to call the game, and that's where I'll throw it to you.
Well, I don't think in football it would help. I don't. I think there's enough guys out there that's actually kind of a synchronized thing dance that they do to where they're usually at least in the right position to make the call. It's not a matter of where their eyes were or where their feet were. There's enough guys either near the sideline or near the middle of the field that can see what's going on. I don't think it would help like holding calls in at all. Like there's a precedent now with holding calls. If you're parallel to your guy, you're not going to get called for holding. Once you stop being parallel to your guy, you're going to get called for holding. I mean, and that's taught. It's not something the coaches don't understand and get really peeved off about. The basketball thing, adding another official to me, guys, there's already 23 bodies out there. You want to add a 24th? I mean, My fear would be everything getting clogged up even more if you had another body out there, just literally another human being out on the floor. You know, there's already, what, 5 guys on each floor, that's 10. There's 3 officials, that's 13. You're going to add a 14th? Sorry.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, you're going to add a 14th body.
Well, if you put them
there's so many, you know, stuff that goes on in the paint already where it's clogged up. I don't really want to clog up anything more.
Well, see, my thing is, though, Matt, and I agree with you, but the thing, how it can be done, then don't put them on the court. If you have them, they could be on the court, but on the baseline, on each baseline, or on the kind of the old hash mark where it used to be, where it doesn't affect the play. That's what I'm thinking. And the key word that you mentioned in football was synchronized, because in basketball, if you guys really watch and pay attention, they call them A, B, and C spots is what they're called. So the officials always rotate. And here's an example. If they call a foul on Matt, and then the official who makes the call, he's at the scores table. When he's at the scores table, that guy stays on the other side in front of the coach, and then one's on the other side, and then one's heading the ball to the free throw. So there's like a sequence that they do. But in how it could be done is that, because you're right, nobody wants to see a cluttered game on the court, but if you put them on each corner, on each baseline, and when the ball swings to the left side, then the right side official kind of goes to the short corner. That way you can eliminate it. It's never going to happen. I mean, we know.
Yeah, I mean, and my last suggestion was going to be, like, while I think CAG's suggestions are probably for the better, it's never going to happen. Like, they're never going to do it. They're never going to make them full-time employees. They're never going to make them, like, you know, they're never going to.
Six fouls is possible, though. I mean, that is. I mean, would you agree with that?
What now?
Six fouls is definitely possible.
It's possible, but, like, I mean –
if your refs are going to suck, give them 6 fouls. That's my theory.
Well, and this is where, like, you know, you shouldn't have brought me into this discussion, because I think we spend way the hell too much time bitching about officials and actually not evaluating play on the court. And that comes from coaches that have just become really, really conditioned to bitch about officials. And I remember coaches going, "It's not why we lost. Move on." Next question.
Like Robert Montgomery.
But they're saying that. Because I gave 3 examples. I know if Brad Underwood was on this podcast, he's going to say what you're saying is they're going to say the politically correct thing. I'm telling you, Matt, I don't know. If you've ever coached, I don't know. And I couldn't tell you. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that it doesn't affect the game. Let's look at the Ohio State-Minnesota game. That affected the outcome of a game. Clearly a block. I mean, and they call a foul. That's just one play. And I don't – people who say to me, oh, there's all these other plays that happen, that's not the same situation. That argument holds no water. I'm not saying you're saying that. They don't make good calls, and it is hard. I'm not saying it's perfect, because I've done it before, and it is extremely difficult to do. I get it. But at the same time, for a coach to sit and say it doesn't affect the outcome of a game, they're going to say that, because you know darn well – off the record, I've been with you. If you had a conversation with Tom Izzo, or if you had a conversation with
Brett Bielema
off record, yes. I mean, you know darn well what you're going to get, but they're not going to say that publicly. They're not going to. And I know darn well some of those fouls, like I mentioned Coleman Hawkins, that was probably the worst one of the night to me. And I guarantee it, but I don't know if he's going to say, well, you know, here's what he'll say to us. Well, the next time Coleman should take one less dribble and do this. No. That wasn't what he should say, but he's going to say that because, one, you get fined for making comments about officiating. That's my beef with it. They do affect the outcome of games, because now they won the game today, but if Illinois wasn't sitting in foul trouble, because in my opinion, and this is mine, all those were not fouls, that would have been a 30-point win, even though it only takes 1 point to win the game. My thing is they do affect the outcome. Let's go back to the mere football guy. Tell me that play didn't affect the outcome of the Michigan game, because I certainly thought it did.
Yeah, there's 2 issues here. One is that if you want to go back to football, I didn't really appreciate Bielema talking out of both sides of his mouth, because he would mention the officiating, and then he would mention there were like 39 other minutes left in that game and we didn't play very well.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, that's fine, but like, you introduced it. And if you don't introduce it and you just say, hey, look, there were 39 other minutes where we didn't play very well, or we didn't play up to our capability, the issue kind of gets dropped. And I do feel like at the end of the year, he finally figured out I'm not going to continue to create excuses for our average, our above average to average play that created losses. I also think that Brad Underwood also understands, Ked, that the lull that happened with this team a lot of the time was them bitching to either A, the coaching staff, or B, to officials, and just not playing, not playing on. And that was a mental thing that this team had to get across. And yeah, Brad Underwood might be saying the politically correct thing, but he also might be trying to tell his team something that might actually make them a better basketball team. And again, it leads me to the line of, I just think we focus way too much on these guys when the 10 other guys on the court are the ones that are deciding this game. And that's just kind of the, I mean, like, honest to God, like if you look at 95% of college basketball games, the guys in stripes like did not like decide a W or an L. Like, and so from that standpoint, you have to basically assume that your team has to play well in order to win. And if you're the coach that's going to bitch about officials, and I thought Izzo did a really poor job today on a game where I thought his team played their butt off and got beat. His first comment is about how the officials screwed him over against the number two ranked team or number one ranked team in the country, however you want to go with Purdue. That's a bad look for his team because they played their butt off. They made some mistakes at the end of the game and didn't close out the game the way that they should have. And so, I was the wrong guy to bring on in this discussion, Mike Cagney, because I'm always going to take the side of we bitch way too much about this officiating. And as many plays as you can point out that the officiators, you know, orchestrated an outcome in the game, I can probably give you twice as many plays where the officials had nothing to do with it. And
that's where the point, I think, no offense, right, but I look at yours as a little bit naivete. I mean, it sounds good. It's just like how people didn't like Muhammad Ali because he bragged. Every other pro athlete, as soon as the door shut, would brag. Muhammad Ali just did it in front of a microphone. So my point on this is why put a human being in a situation where it's hard to succeed? And so having these guys try to get extra games in, and they've been on 7 flights in 6 days, and it's just total bullshit.
I completely agree with that point.
And like, pay them more money. Yeah. Pay them more money. Pay them benefits. Give them training all year round. Give them conditioning options. And people are like, you're against the refs. I guess if you want people to succeed, I'm right there against them.
No, I'm pro player. I'm pro your argument on that one. The problem is that there's no benefit to them doing it. So
that's where I think I come from the business world. And so if I have a product that I'm selling and I have a way to make it a little bit better that differentiates it from my competition, that means I get better ratings. I make more money. So when you look at officials, and Kevin Warren's going off to the Bears now, but if you look at officials are not an expense. They are an investment. And just like, you know, if somebody told me, well, I don't like sound in movies because it's expensive. So sure, I'm going to make movies, but we're not going to have sound in it because that's too expensive. Right. Well, there's a reason why when they put talkies in that all they converted over. And I'll be honest with you, if the Big Ten did this, the SEC would do it the next year. And then the rest of college football and basketball would have to figure it out. But more importantly, these guys would be in a better place to succeed, or gals, because it could be a woman referee. Sure. I don't care. But they would be in a better place to succeed because they would have some of the advantages that the college players have themselves. And you're always going to have humans. So there, you know, there's going to be mistakes. The other thing I would invest in if I was a football thing, and I don't know the technology, but I would take the pitch technology that Fox uses where they tell you it's ball and strike, that 3D technology. And I would do whatever I needed to do with drones or whatever over the top of the end zone so that you can kind of tell if a guy's in or not, you know, and not have to worry about that type of stuff.
Yeah. Here's my one major priority, and I think on both sports, and this is just my pet peeve. It really doesn't have that much to do with officiating, but I think if you did what might look, I want to make it very clear. The Cagley suggestions, I'm 100% in favor of. 100%. I just don't ever see a major conference not being drug kicking and screaming to do it. And because they've had enough time to think that this is a good idea. And
but they haven't had the cash flow that they're going to have.
Yeah, they kind of have, though. I mean, you could have done it even with the current,
you could have, but
like you could have done it. They just don't want to. They just don't want to.
The percentages now get small, though, Matt. That's
right.
Like when you run a business, you're
like, NFL product, though. This is my biggest pet peeve. And I think that if you
make NFL
less fouls, like I think that this, I think games are too long. I think football games are way the hell too long. I think basketball games are way the hell too long. And that would be my major pet peeve to try to get shorter games. Because I think the NFL does a really good job of, okay, we got a three-hour window to get this game in. We're going to get the game in the three-hour window. And I think college games do a disservice by making them. College football games in major conferences now are 4 hours minimum. And I think that that's a disservice.
This year, Matt, they actually got longer than the Lord of the Rings extended version. I swear to God, those extended version Lord of the Rings movies are now shorter.
There's no reason why that semifinal game needed to have that field goal go off on midnight Eastern time. Like, there's no way that needed to happen. So if less fouls and less penalties were called, I'm sure the game would be quicker. But that would be my major. I think that's what's taking people away from, you know, current television ratings, especially in certain blocks of time, is that, you know, they just don't want to watch 4 hours worth of a game. I don't know if officials need to be better, but I do think that ever since I've been growing up, they've had the opportunity with the amount of money that they had in the pot to do something with the officials, and they just don't want to do it. Based off of greed in America, I'm not really seeing a whole bunch of, like, again, motivation. Like, now that we have more money to, like, do it when we, you know, could have done it before. That's my thing.
That's where
I would do it. I 100% would do it.
You need business leaders, not guys. And, you know, the funny thing is I think if the Big Ten, here's the funniest thing. If the Big Ten and the SEC did it, you know who would do it?
Every other conference.
The NFL would do it because that they would actually be like, ah, shit, because they're going to be competing now with this 12-game final is going to start impinging a little bit on the importance of NFL football on a weekend.
Well, part of that happened part of that happened also because of the referee strike, right? We had those remember that season where we had those like first 4 weeks of part-time officials in the NFL? Oh.
Awful.
Yeah, and everybody kind of went, well, this is garbage. And
the NFL doesn't have full-time refs.
I know, but they had better benefits after the strike
than they did
before. And so that's what you're talking about is business and then employee rights. These guys are independent contractors.
Oh, I agree.
Games, and I don't know how much leverage they've got other than the conference just going, hey, we want to have a better product with the three guys and the, I think, eight. Do I count it right? I don't remember how many football officials off the top of my head there are, but like how many guys we have out there. But I also think, you know, I'd love to see it happen. I just don't think the conferences are motivated to do it, but I think it would improve the product. But I also, you know, again, I think that there's a lot of things that could be done to speed up games, none of which have anything to do with the officials, that would make a better product.
Yep.
Hey, Mike, I'm going to make one more comment real quick. Today, I listened to a Michigan State podcast today, and it's really weird. At first, and this is me being blind by this, thinking that only Illinois fans complain about officials.
Oh, everybody does.
I listened to two media guys that are fully credentialed media guys from Michigan State, and they were hot about the game Friday night. They clearly blamed that loss on the officiating. So it's not just Illinois fans. It's everywhere. I mean, people, you know, Matt, you mentioned a few weeks ago, and I remember you saying this, and I started paying attention to it, that it's not just Big Ten officials. It's everywhere. It's not. If you look at I watched Kentucky and, you know, Tennessee the other night, there were some horrible calls. It goes on everywhere. I mean, I just think because, you know, people are invested in the Big Ten because that's who we cover. That's what we see, but it does. It's bad, and I can say it to you. If you ever talk to these coaches off the air, they're going to tell you the right thing. But, you know, again, I mean, this podcast went from the Minnesota game to the officiating. So
yeah. So now we're gonna now for the people who are listening to this, going, what's next? Well, guess what? We have Brad Sturdy, who was up in Minneapolis. He was banished to the Twin Cities for the weekend. who was there for both the women and the men's game. So, Brad, we've just argued all about the officials, and we need full-time officials, et cetera. But let's go back to the game, which all of us admit the officials really didn't make a difference in. Illinois 78-60 whomping of the Gophers. What jumped out at you?
Well, the biggest thing was I thought Illinois, when they had their normal lineups on the floor, they completely dominated this game. It was only, you know, they're up 7 when they get the second foul on Hawkins, and then they're up, you know, then they win the second half by, you know, 15 points, which is even more before the subs at the end even. So, yeah, I think Illinois was about 30 points better than Minnesota with the normal lineups without the foul trouble. And I'm not saying there weren't fouls or anything.
I said that.
Yeah, so, Ked, you're getting smarter. You're starting to agree with me. There you go. So, I think that was obvious. And, you know, that's with Terrence Shannon not playing real well. Matthew Meyer is just a really tough matchup for these guys, for everyone in the Big Ten. Because he's 6'9", he's got the ability to shoot the ball from deep, he can deck it, he can get in the paint, he can go pass it. So he's not just that. And he's also a great defender when he locks in defensively. Yeah, he'll have sometimes when he, you know, spaces out, but he's really good. He's just a really good player. Right now, he's the best player on Illinois on both ends. Now, Terrence Shannon has at times been a great player, and he's had some great games. But, you know, Meyer's been a little bit more consistent, you know, with his perimeter shot, so that kind of changes it. I'm really impressed with the squad where they're at right now. Dane Danger playing well. I thought he was a tough matchup. And I would say that the other thing to know is that Illinois has multiple guys that can score, and also multiple guys can defend multiple positions. Ty Rogers playing center at times tonight, essentially defending the center spot. So you a lot of versatility in this group. So I'm really impressed with that aspect of this team, and I think that bodes well for the future.
Yeah, I was really hoping Ty would get one more touch to go into double figures, because he had 8 points and 8 rebounds, played well. And of course, if he could make some free throws, he would have been in double figures tonight. When you were there watching it, anything, you know, come out to you in terms of, you know, matchups? I think one of the things I found most interesting was, you know, you had Coleman Hawkins, when he's out there against other fives, he's almost unguardable. When he plays against other fours, those guys are a little quicker and can give him a little bit of trouble. Did you see anything like that on the matchups that intrigued you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the big thing is, I will say this. I think that Illinois' length was a really important factor tonight. I mean, their ability to change shots and affect shots at the rim is really impressive, not to mention their closeouts on three-point shooters. So I think that's a big matchup when you look at that. But I agree with you on Hawkins. I think he is offensively and he is a difference maker when he's on the floor, because he connects people when he's not trying to do too much. And you saw him just pull up and shot a couple threes, and they were good-looking threes, and that's what you want him to do. But when he's on the floor, you saw tonight he was I think he was a plus 20 or something like that. He was the best plus-minus on the team tonight. So in his, like, you know, only played like 18, 19 minutes. So very, very impressive game from the entire squad. But I agree with you on that matchup. The other one I'll say is Terrence Shannon is a guy who has that versatility to guard 1 through 4 right now. And that's impressive too, because it really gives you some flexibility on the defensive end.
Yeah, and he was a little off on his shooting tonight, going 2 for 12. It looked like they were trying to get him started. Any suggestions that you might have on what they could do a little differently, or your response to, you know, because he did get good looks at the rim, just seemed like he just couldn't get it to go down. And he also had a few plays where I thought he maybe, you know, earned another little more time at the free throw line.
I don't know how to shoot consistently be one. He doesn't shoot the same though every time. Never does.
One thing that hurt him tonight, I think he got a little flustered early. He got bumped on a couple of rim runs. He got hit on the arm on his first jump shot of the night. And then he got getting to the basket. He thought he got bumped early. Didn't get called. And so he was a little frustrated. I think that's one thing right now. He's got to learn to control that little frustration because he feels like he's getting fouled a lot and not getting those calls. And, you know, he's not Zach Edey, so you can't expect to get every call. So, anyway, and so they have a but I would say that the one thing that they have to do a better job of is finding a way to get him an easy basket at times. And I know he got some good looks, but sometimes it's like you can see Underwood's trying to include everybody. He runs little sets for Coleman. He runs them for RJ. He runs them for Meyer. He runs them for Shannon early in the game to kind of see what's rolling. And I think with Terrence, the other thing he can do is get out and transition and attack the rim because that's when he's at his best. And so sometimes they allowed Minnesota to control the pace early in that game. And then the second half, they controlled the action. And I think that was the difference, one of the main differences in the game.
Have you seen – did you think Illinois – I thought this was their best rebounding effort of the season. They were relentless on the boards. Anything that you saw with that you know, is that something you saw or how did you look at it?
Yeah. No doubt. I actually talked about it in the pregame. That was one of the keys to the game was to attack the basket and offensive glass because that's how DePaul was able to dismantle them. Ohio State, on the other hand, didn't attack the offensive glass. And the one thing, there's no penalty against Minnesota, and this is one of my things as a coach, there's no penalty to attack the offensive glass against Minnesota because they do not want to run. So if they don't want to run, then there's no penalty to attack the glass. So you send three guys to the basket, and you're okay because they're going to slow it down because they want to get in a half-court game because they can't get an up-and-down, full up-tempo game. They're going to struggle. That's where, you know, if they were a little – if I were doing it in Minnesota, you have to push it when they send three to the offensive glass and take advantage of a 3-on-2 or a 4-on-3 to get a clean look. And yeah, obviously, I think that's the way you have to play. You have to take advantage to prevent them from doing that. So there has to be a penalty for them for attacking the rim, but they don't ever do it. So you have to attack the rim against Minnesota.
Yeah, and the other thing, if you look at this, what effects do you think Luke Goody coming back will have on the rotations that coach has right now? Because they've been pretty darn effective. And of course we all, you know, want Luke to kick butt, and we all think he will. But is there any type of tightrope that Coach Underwood is walking when he brings another guy back into this machine that seems to be clicking so well?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a gradual thing. I don't think you can take Luke and stick him out there for 25 minutes a game because if you do that, it's going to really upset the apple cart. So I think that he's got to come back and earn it in practice. I know you never say that, but an injured guy shouldn't lose. But no, you're in the middle of the season. You're playing, and you're playing well right now. So when he does come back, I think it's a matter of getting him in there, getting him acclimated, getting him through some practices, and then get him where – I mean, he's doing drills right now, but he's not doing any 5-on-5 yet. So
yep.
He's doing a lot of drills, shooting drills, passing drills, things like that. So he's going to learn to adjust that. Now, when he comes back, the one thing he does that better than anyone else on this team is space the floor. Because he's 6'7", and he can shoot it. And like, you know, he's the best shooter on the team at 6'7". So if you get that, now you have that spacing and he's got the ability to allow more movement for guys like Danger to Shannon, whoever it is, or Epps, those guys who are Meyer.
And then one question that I've gotten via Twitter, DMs, and from fans, is there any way that we can – what can we expect? Will Perrin get any time on the court? And then – I'm not certain how people expect this since he's not even here yet, but what about Moretti?
So Underwood said post-game that the plan is not to play Moretti for sure. Right now the plan is probably not to play Zach as well, unless there's like probably an injury. So, you know, plan is not to play Moretti, but if Jaden Epps or Sincere Harris get hurt, you probably will have to. The plan is not to play Perrin, but if Dane Danger were able to somehow get injured, you may have to play him. So the idea behind that is that these guys are doing an off-season strength and conditioning program to gain like off season straight. This is 4 months right then, from January to April, when they can really make huge strides, almost like other guys make from May to August. Well, now you can make those strides there and make more strides in May to August, because when you're in season, you can't do the same level of conditioning and weightlift training. So right. It has to be different, because you're getting prepared for games and have to be ready to play. So it's a different animal. And, you know, we saw that from Dane Danger, and he made huge strides. I actually asked Dane about that, and he thought it was really important to his success this year, you know, going against Kobe every day in practice and doing all these extra conditioning things. Now that's what Zachary Parent's doing. He's helping him through that process.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see Dane. He may be a better offensive player than Kofi, which is just amazing when you look at the footwork that he has and the diversity of moves. Did you have any idea that he would be such a pain in the butt for opposing Big Ten centers to guard?
You know, they talked about the biggest thing was figuring out what, you know, how he would handle it in a game situation. Because they're playing a college game. But, yeah, they were always high on him. They loved his footwork in the post. He's got soft hands. He's got the ability to use either hand around the rim. I think that's the impressive part of it. He's just – he's a guy that can do that. And that's where he can really – you know, he's different than Kobe. He doesn't have the ability to just basically, you know, pin a guy and then turn and dunk on his head. So it's a little bit different, but he's more skilled with it, you know, when it comes to shooting those lefty and righty hooks, spinning fast guys, got quicker feet, more nimble. I love the word nimble. It's a great word. But, yeah, he's more nimble. So, yeah, I think Danger is that kind of guy. And yeah, so I expected him to be good. I think he's a little far ahead. He's further ahead in conditioning and his ability to understand game situations. And I know he makes a couple of plays every game that you're like, what is he doing? But you don't understand, like, that's that growing lack of experience. He's played – coming into the season, he played, like 8 minutes in college. It's different.
Well, nimble is, as I recall, I remember reading one of your bios where you were the nimblest correspondent covering the Big Ten. So that's probably why you like the word so much.
Well, you know, when you look at the Illinois beat writers, you know, we're not the most nimble group. So maybe that's it.
Hey, you know, the funny thing is I saw that little almost like a Buck Williams hook flip, you know, where he takes the ball up and flips it with his wrist at the top. We saw it tonight from Rodgers. So are we seeing the rebirth of Buck Williams? Because I'll tell you, I used to love that little hook shot he did in the lane.
Well, yeah, I mean, they all watch Jaden Epps make all these little hook shots, and they're like, well, I need to do that. And so that's been part of Ty's game, you know, for his whole career. That's what Ty Rodgers does really well. I know people haven't seen that. But, you know, Ty Rodgers, 8 points, 8 rebounds tonight. He distributed the ball. He was really good. And that's the kind of guy that they were expecting to get night in and night out when the season started. And you know, so now it's really starting to click for these guys.
Okay, so let's talk, you know, this week we got the hated Indiana Hoosiers coming into the State Farm Center, 7:30 Thursday night on FS1. Any thoughts? I know it's a few days out and you haven't had a chance to totally break down this game yet, but any initial thoughts that Illini fans should ponder in the gap between now and Thursday night?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting game because Illinois has done a really good job of taking away three-point shots. Well, Indiana doesn't shoot it very well from three, so they're going to want to pound it inside. And it'll be interesting to see what they do. Do they let Trace Jackson Davis play one-on-one against, you know, Dane Danger or Coleman Hawkins, whoever's on him, or Brandon Lee, maybe, the Liebenator. We're all believers now. But so I want to know if that's going to be intriguing to me, how they decide to defend Indiana. Because they're different. You know, Minnesota, when they win, it's usually when they make threes. Michigan State, when they win, it's because they make threes. Well, these guys are different. You know, Indiana's different. And they're going to look to get to the line, attack the basket, and do those types of things. And they're a little shorthanded in Indiana right now, without you know, Johnson and Thompson. So without those guys, that's tough for them coming into a hostile environment. I think and you know can play the style that they want to play and be successful because Illinois is elite at defending the rim with their shot block. See how I use elite? I'm Brad Underwood light. So, yeah. So they're elite at defending the rim. So, the other thing, I think that's a fun matchup, but I really like Illinois in that matchup at home.
Okay. So now the last question for you, then we're going to pivot back over to talk about the fact that we have a law firm returning to the football team next season. So, Brad, you've been there. You've had it. How was Fat Lorenzo's, which was my personal favorite pizza joint in the Twin Cities? Now, a caveat is that was from like 1995 to 2006. So I have not been there in 16 years, but how was it?
Well, it was pretty good. I'm going to give it a 9 on the sturdy scale. So 9 out of 10. So that's a really good rating. I love they have the Greek salad was fantastic. The massive 18-inch long breadstick, twisted breadstick. And then we got a Italian quesadilla, which was also elite. So, yeah, it gets a high rating. Very good. The pizza had a really sweet kind of doughy crust. Wasn't crazy thick. They call it New York style, but I would say it's a little thicker than New York style. But
yep.
But it was the toppings were fresh. It was really good. I mean, it was like had a little bit of when I'm thinking about thickness, maybe like a Papa John's thickness, but like on steroids and better. So pretty good.
Go ahead.
I did that after watching the Illini women yesterday. Which is also a great fun.
Any thoughts on the women's game before we switch over topics here?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, the women are fun to watch. They have that three guard. They got the three-headed monster. They got the three guards, Makaira Cook, Genesis Bryant, and Dahlia McKenzie. Then they got they basically have a nice, four-woman. Ken Obostic, who's maybe a little bit like James Augustine. So I just want, they're going to go 36. 2 next year and get to the Final Four. Just,
37 and 2.
No, but seriously, they are. The thing is, people should go out and see these girls play because they are fun to watch. They get up and down, they push it, they attack the basket, they shoot the three, they play the way they play basketball the proper way. They really do. They spray it around, they pass the ball, they attack the glass, they play hard. They're really fun to watch. And Shona Green is, I mean, if they continue on this pace, she's National Coach of the Year, and I'm not sure it's close because of what she's done. This team won 7 games. They played a team yesterday that they lost to by 33 last year, and they controlled the action from start to finish. So pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, and go ahead, Ked.
I do want to make one comment about – Brad made a comment about people going to watch them play. Minnesota women, they have one of the worst records in college basketball. And when I watched that game yesterday, that whole lower bottom was full. There's no reason that the University of Illinois, people have been, I don't want to use the word complaining about putting a winner and why can't the women win? Well, now you have a coach who's going to battle out the Ohio State coach for probably National Coach of the Year. They're fun to watch. We have a good product. They're going to be in every game that they play. There's no reason that they can't put 6,000-7,000 people at every game. I mean, she's being nice about it. I mean, she's asking. The girls are asking. The women are asking. Excuse me. I got in trouble for that once on Twitter. The women are asking that, hey, get out and support them because it could be the other way around. They could be 6-2-14 or whatever again. That's not the case. So they're asking for it. They're winning all these awards, and they are actually good. I mean, they are entertaining to watch. So Brad's right. Get out and support them. They're looking for it. They're asking for it. And the people who follow recruiting, the recruits are looking, and when they see the fans are full, Iowa City hosts 15,500. They put 12,000-13,000 at every game for a women's game.
Dovetail off that, Mike. Like, I agree with everything that Ked said, except I know Shauna's personality, and there will become a point where she won't be nice about it. And so, like, let's get people in the building before she has to go there, because she has that in her, and I don't want to see it, because I'd like to see the lower bowl at State Farm Center always full for her games. They have a huge game Wednesday night against Indiana, that they can win. They definitely can win. It'll be the first time in God knows how long that they've beaten Indiana. And look, Shauna is being real nice about this, as nice as she can be, but I know her personality and she's not thrilled about it. And so let's not get her to the point where she publicly becomes not thrilled about it. And I don't think it will. I think if they continue to win, Josh has put all the resources to that program that they need to. There are going to be people that come into the building. There's not much to do on a Sunday afternoon where they play most of their games. You can get 3,000-5,000 people in State Farm Center and have it be feeling like it's there's, you know, 8, 9, 10.
Easily. I agree, Matt. I agree.
It's not like there's a Bears football game to watch. So, you know,
no,
on a Sunday afternoon. So get there.
They have a football team? Just kidding.
They used to.
Kevin Warren runs it now.
There you go. No wonder.
So now let's now for those people at home who are like, what are they going to talk about next? Let's pivot and let's let everybody, you know, most Illini fans know this, but there may be a few that haven't had a chance to read about this yet, but the law firm of Newton and Randolph has officially opened business for the 2023 football season. So, Matt, give us a little bit of an idea of what this means for the football team, and then we'll pivot over to Brad to talk about, you know, maybe what it takes to get players like this to come back.
Well, you guys know how much I hate hyperbole, right? Like, and so I say this having done hours of research today, trying to figure out somebody who has a more productive defensive line coming back in college football, not the Big Ten, in college football. I can't find one. I cannot find a college football defensive line, and I'm including Illinois as outside linebacker rush ends because they make the five-man front what it is. But I can't find anybody who has defensive linemen that has had a more productive season in 2022 who are coming back for 2023. The fact that Johnny Newton is an All-American and decided to come back, he has a chance to be the first back-to-back first-team All-Big Ten selection at Illinois since Vontae Davis in 2007 and 2008. And he was the first first-team defensive lineman at Illinois since Whitney Marcellus in 2011. I mean, there is no reason to think that if Johnny Newton wanted to go in the draft, he wouldn't have heard his name called in April, like at some point in Kansas City during those 3 days. There's no doubt in my mind that that would have happened. But you know, it's my understanding, and Sturdy can talk to about this a little bit more, but it's my understanding with the sources that I have that he actually had people in his camp more convinced, trying to convince him to stay than to go. And because his head eventually, when he got to Tampa, was, well, this is going to be my last game and I'm going in the NFL. And there was a massive flip on that because his family, you know, his girlfriend who just gave birth to their child and their baby daughter in November, they all told him, you need to come back and get your degree. That was all told to him in that camp is what is all the sources I was told. And then you mix in the fact that Keith Randolph just proved he can have a fully healthy 20, you know, football season and production he can provide with that. And I think there's another level for Keith to get to not just in terms of production, but in terms of putting together everything that he's taught by J-Mo and Brett Bielema on that defense. I think there's another level he can get to. So, you know, usually we point to guys like Georgia, and I'm sure that Georgia is going to have an unbelievable defensive front next year. We usually point to, you know, programs like Alabama, but I'm sure Nick's going to have, and whoever is going to coordinate that defense is going to have an unbelievable defensive front. But there's 14 teams in the Big Ten next year. I don't think Illinois has anybody to look up to when it comes to their defensive front next year. And I also think that Randolph and Newton coming back is going to have a major impact on whoever is going to play at the nose. And that could be T.Rod Edwards. It could be Rashad Wilkins. It could be somebody else out of the portal. I don't know yet. But if it's either one of those two guys, they raised their game throughout the entire journey of the 2022 season to another level. And there's an unbelievable level that they can get to, too. I think, you know, you guys know that I think that this game is won and lost at the line of scrimmage. Well, I think Illinois just put a dominant pitch together that they're going to have an unbelievable chance to win the line of scrimmage on the defensive end each and every time they line it up in 2023. And that's exactly what bringing back two all Big Ten players and an All-American does in college football now. And I don't think anybody at Illinois right now has any right to look up to anybody in the country as to we have a worse defensive line than you do. There's no way that I have not found anybody in the country that can say that right now. And that's what the return of the law firm, you know, Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph does exactly immediately today.
So does their return, does that give anybody any ideas on how they're going to stop Wisconsin's four quarterback offense?
I have no earthly idea what Phil Longo is trying to do at Wisconsin. I've said this before, I'll say it again. I think Phil Longo will run the football. He has proven that he's done that at stops before. He is willing to do it. But, you know, I learned a long time ago that if you want to have a country band, you better play the fiddle. Well, if you want to play football in Camp Randall, you better run the ball. I have no earthly idea what they're doing. I have no earthly idea how Luke Fickell thinks his defense is going to pair with what Phil Longo wants to do on offense in the middle of the winter, come like the end of October in Madison, and think that this is going to work. So, but Mike, there's, you know, they open with Penn State, I think, in Big Ten play. There's no reason to think that based off of everything that I've saw with the Penn State offensive line this year, that Illinois shouldn't dominate the line of scrimmage if everything stays the same on that game. So when you're talking about like the Penn States, the Michigans and the Ohio States of the world, and I'm telling you that Illinois has the best defensive front in the conference, that's saying something. And that's saying something that Brett Bielema has built, and the culture that Brett Bielema has built, because these are Lovie Smiths and quite frankly, you know, these are recruits from a guy who now coaches for the Miami Dolphins, who are in the playoffs, by the way. These are Lovie Smith's guys, but Brett Bielema has built a culture that they want to stick around, and they are convinced to stick around, because I promise you that in Tampa, Johnny Newton thought he was headed to the NFL. I promise you that was the case. And there's a little bit of leeway that I was told by my sources, like as of a week ago, that they were more convinced that Johnny Newton was going to come back than Keith was. Because Keith had people in his ear telling him that he was NFL bound. But I think that both of these guys like being in school. Both of these guys like the idea of getting their degree. And both of these guys like the idea of playing for Illinois. And that's a culture that's being built by Brett Bielema, Aaron Henry, and everybody in that Smith Center right now. And I think that that's a huge part of what you saw happen today with the return of Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph.
So, Brad, we have a situation here where obviously, you know, you have to have the NIL, that's name, image, and likeness, funds to offset what it might be, you know, out there for somebody who's drafted in the NFL draft. Is Illinois getting that house in order on the football side? We've heard rumblings that, you know, they don't have that much. They certainly haven't signed 10, 12 people out of the portal the way you see Wisconsin and Michigan State doing. What does it take for a team to be competitive in the portal? And what are your thoughts on Illinois and the NIL, Brad?
Well, I think Illinois is a different animal than, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, probably Wisconsin too. So I think they're different animals. They're trying to compete at a different level. Doesn't mean you don't want to beat those teams, but trying to compete from an NIL standpoint at a different level. I think it's more important that Illinois keeps the guys they develop and then fills holes through the portal. And maybe they're not going to get the Devin Leary, but you get Luke Altmyer, who's a really good player. So I think a lot of talent. So I think that's where they have to make those. They're going to take a few, maybe three, four guys in the portal and fill some holes and do that. And I think it's possible they can be successful. Now, they're going to have to – sometimes you have to pay because you're competing. What you're competing with is NFL dollars. Now, I know that I've been told, I think Matt has too, that Newton did take a discount to come back.
Huge one. Like, in my opinion, a huge one.
Well, I agree, and I think so. I think it was – so what I was told, and I'm not going to talk numbers because that's their business, but I was told that in December both guys actually agreed to a number, and then they started looking at the actual numbers and were like, wait a second, we should get more than that. And so then it was like – and then a week ago, Randolph said he was coming back, and Newton had said that he was not. And then it was like, okay, so I know that they had talked to them, you know, some people from – Illini Guardians, from Icon, which is the new deal that's kind of rolling in the NIL funds, bringing in NIL funds. And they had talked to them and said, all right, we kind of moved it up. And then Matt mentioned the pressure from people to get your degree. So I think it's a big deal. And I do think, and this is going to sound crazy, maybe, but I think Johnny Newton is the best, you know, defensive lineman Illinois had in a long time, right? Keith Randolph actually may have more upside and potential because he's a little because of his size and length than Newton does. So if he has a massive year, he could really see his stock go up because he has the physical traits maybe that you can't teach. So yeah, I think they sold him on that. They got him back, and you got to pay for your own guys. I think those are guys you've given to the program and done a good job. And Illinois has some of the fewest transfers out in the portal era. I think that's a testament to what Brett Bielema has put together and the culture that he has built.
Yeah, and I had to deal with an Ohio State fan who was explaining to me that Ohio State didn't deal in the portal because they don't pay people to come play at Ohio State. They just pay people to stay at Ohio State. And then I'm like, okay, if you really believe that, then you need to count the number of stars in those recruiting classes and try to figure out how they got there so that they could stay in the first place.
Yeah, you might want to remind that Ohio State fan of yours, Mike, that there was a rumor that got started this morning that CJ Stroud was going to like come back to college, and like have no earthly idea how that got started, but that got started by Ohio State people, like and people in the state of Ohio. So there, look, I agree with everything that Sturdy said. I think Sturdy and I are hearing the exact same thing. We've talked about it off the air. Johnny Newton took a huge discount, but he took a huge discount in the sense that I think he took what was given to him now. And from what I was told by the people that were in charge of this whole thing of putting the package together for Johnny Newton. And I'm not going to talk numbers either because it's not my place. But he also doesn't think that's the end of it either. And I don't either. Mike, you can address this more as the business person of this whole thing, but I was told that there's a sense by Johnny Newton that if he's going to be the face of Illinois football next year in 2023, and there's a really good chance that he probably will be, or the two of them, the law firm will be, which is probably a safe bet. If you're going to put Illinois on a billboard, if you're going to have, if you're going to make the schedule poster, guess what? Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph are going to be on it. There's going to be chances for local businesses to get in on the pie later on once they've come back and get involved in this. So the number might grow just simply because of the interest in Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph being on campus, right? And so that may not be the full number that they end up with by the end of the year if they can get their, if they can be the best, investors or, business people that they can be at 21, 22, 23 years old. So that's kind of what I'll say about that. But yeah, it was refreshing to hear that there were a lot of people in Johnny Newton's camp who could have pushed him to the NFL that was more pushing him to coming back to college. And Sturdy is 100% correct, because I was told that the NFL people are kind of split on Johnny Newton because A, he's not going to get bigger than 6'2", and B, his arms aren't going to get any longer, right? The physical stand in your underwear of senior day is not going to be impressive for Johnny Newton, okay? It's going to have to be all on tape. And the tape is the tape is damn impressive. Keith Randolph is 6'5", 315 pounds, and he moves like a basketball player. There is somebody that's going to look at him in a workout and go, oh my God, we have to have him. Like, and you mix that in with the tape that's already at least semi-productive. And then if he blows up this year from a production standpoint, Brad's absolutely right. Keith Randolph's a guy that just from the physicality of what he is and is a guy that NFL people are going to go, my God, we have to have him. Like, so the investment in Keith Randolph coming back to school by the way, Keith really likes being at Illinois and really likes being in college. They both did. They both really, really do. They like the college life a heck of a lot more. But Keith is using this as an investment to, you know, get better. And by the way, his head coach coached defensive line in the NFL. So there's a thought process there that Keith can earn a lot more money than he ever could if he entered the draft this April. And I don't disagree with that 100%. I think Keith made a great decision. And I think there's the possibility of Johnny Newton putting together another thing of tape and potentially being a guaranteed second round pick instead of, you know, a possible middle round selection, which would have happened, I think, in this draft coming up this spring.
Well, and we'll give him opportunity for, you know, there's coaches like Belichick out there that worry more about performance than they do, you know, certain measurables. But so let's kind of wrap this up. Matt, you know, we'll let you kind of go first and then we'll wrap up with Brad. So any outstanding thoughts on the Illini game tonight or on the future of the football team based on what we have learned today?
Two bullet points, one on each. The basketball game, and Sturdy can tell me if I'm not seeing this correctly, but one of the things I loved about the basketball game today was Ty Rogers. I know it's only 8-8, but I think that Brad Underwood has a bullet in his gun now in terms of defensive stopper for a wing. Anybody that's between 6'4" and 6'9" that can get hot during a game, I fully expect Ty Rogers to be walking to the scorer's table and then guarding that person. Whether that's Fletcher Moore at Purdue, Caleb McConnell at Rutgers, I could keep going on and on down the list. Everybody's got one like that. And today it was Garson Garcia at 6'10", and he ended up with about 17 points today, but he got cold because Ty Rogers became a very interesting matchup for him on both ends of the floor. And I thought that's when Illinois started to pull away in the second half. So I was really interested in Ty Rogers' game. On the football side, again, Illinois knows who they are, and this moment today proves that Illinois and Brett Bielema knows who they are from an identity standpoint, and the building blocks of what Illinois is going to be next year is going to be at the line of scrimmage and on a defense that, quite frankly, guys, they lose now one starter in the front seven, and that's the nose tackle position, Calvin Avery. And they already have about four or five guys in the back that have played a bowl game against an air raid offense that have a lot of confidence of young guys coming back. I think there's the potential for this defense to not take as big a step back, even when you're losing a Sidney Brown and you led the FBS in scoring defense the entire country this year. I don't think there's a potential for them to take a massive step back defensively next year, which is key when you're trying to bring in, a new quarterback, a new running back, and a new offensive line combination on the other side of the ball. I think Illinois knows that they can win games again with defense and winning games at the line of scrimmage. And this move proves to me that this was the most important thing of their offseason, and they hit it out of the park 2-for-2.
And final word here, Mr. Sturdy. You got any thoughts on either the football program or the basketball program?
Yeah, I really think it's a really good weekend for Illinois basketball and football and women's basketball. Women's basketball ranked 21st in the country on playing really well. They have a big game against Indiana coming up. Men's basketball won 4 in a row, climbing the Big Ten standings. They have a big game against Indiana as well. And the football team, you know, they look like they have an opportunity to win maybe 8 games next year again and get to another, you know, big bowl game. And I think this is what you want from Illinois Athletics. They're on the right path, and, you know, it's a lot of fun to watch and experience and be a part of.
Excellent. So what we'll do, folks, is, of course, remember this podcast, Eye on the Illini, is fueled and powered by IlliniGuys.com. It is basically 7 days for free. We bill you on the 7th day. It's a $99 annual subscription. We haven't raised our prices since we started. You want this coverage, you got it right here. The cool thing about it is you go back into the message boards after you read the stories, and you can actually see the thoughts of other Illini fans. You can go back and forth with them, and you can ask questions of Brad or Matt or Ked. It's pretty cool. We've also got podcasts. We have Ked's Recruiting Roundup. We have Sturdy for 30, two other award-winning podcasts that go with Eye on the Illini. And we have the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular, our weekly two-week radio extravaganza. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click on the radio button. You can find all the places that that have our show, and you can go ahead and find the one closest to you, figure out what day, Friday or Saturday, and tune us in at the time that it is written down, and you can enjoy the Illini Guys. For all these things, we ask that you either give the station a phone call or an email to thank them. And, of course, any podcast that you can give us a five-star rating really helps us as well. And, folks, we will be back. We obviously have the game Thursday night against Indiana. And in between, we're all rooting for a one of those great days that the Illini and the Cowboys win. So go Illini.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.